Thanks. Hi, I'd like to tell you about thesis work of Aria Farahi, my student at Michigan, in collaboration with both simulators and observers, with a focus on the issue of property covariance in massive halos, i.e. the correlation of deviations around the mean of things like M star versus M gas at fixed halo mass and redshift. So, next slide. Math, I was happy to see some equations in the previous talk. I think that was sort of the first that we saw so far. But if you go to this paper, what you'll see is an exact, well, an analytic expression, a closed form expression for the space density of halos as a function of multiple observables. So this thing S is a log of some vector of observables, which would include, say, central stellar mass of the galaxy in the halo, the total stellar mass of the galaxies, and say a lambda measure, richness measure for a cluster, and X-ray luminosity, whatever you want. So that vector goes linearly in log mass, right? That's power law. So these are slopes, that's an intercept. And then this covariance matrix is a key thing, right? So the elements of covariance, the diagonal properties, the square root is the scatter that we've been talking about. But the off-diagonal properties carry information too, and that's what I want to focus on here. So let's go, next slide is first simulation work. We go, thanks to Yop for the introduction, to Bahamas. And Maxis. Maxis is 390 zoom simulations for the very high mass end with the same physics that was tuned in Bahamas. And so you put those data sets together. And what's being shown here, so that's what we did. And we did a localized linear regression, meaning put a little filter in halo mass and fit a local linear regression to, as a function of halo mass. And that's what's shown in this plot over here. So we pull out the slope and scatter, and they both run with the halo mass in this way shown, and this kind of picks up from the plot that Yop showed, which is focused on this halo mass area, and we go up to 10 to the 15 for clusters. Down here is, and then over here is the form of the deviations about this mean behavior, and it really is log normal, right? This is 60,000 halos, it's super log normal. And then here is the correlation coefficient between N gas and M star at fixed halo mass. And M gas, sorry, and M star here is the total stellar mass content of the halo, not the central, but we can do it for the central. And what you find is a negative correlation of about correlation coefficient of minus 0.5. Rhapsody G, which Heidi led back in the day, had minus 0.7. It's a little bit inconsistent, but there's funny things happening at the very high mass end where the scatter is getting very small, and so there's not much lever arm to get a correlation coefficient. But think about minus 0.5 as a target number. Let's go. And then here's the last slide. This is data. So this is going to Sarah, to Locus, which is Graham Smith, Sarah Mulroy, who just graduated in Birmingham. These are a bunch of properties. We have 50 clusters with very high signal-to-noise measurements of things like K-band luminosity, total, a lambda measure from REDMAPPER kind of lambda, and various X-ray quantities. And what we see is a negative correlation to the weak for all hot, cold gas covariances. Okay, so we're close to seeing this as not predicted, but rather anticipated by simulations. Okay.
Thank you. So I really enjoyed talking to some of you about a few topics, and I've listed a few others that I hope I can continue discussions. I'm talking about the work of those four wonderful people at Penn, and others at Barcelona, Urbana-Champaign, and Chicago, and colleagues in the Dark Energy Survey with whom they're doing this work. So these are two topics that, in case you're curious, I'd love to talk afterwards. The results I want to show you are, the upper panel is galaxy clusters. So Sirhad mentioned, Eric Baxter and Qiwei Chang led a paper where we pointed out that you need to look not just at the log derivative of the total profile, but actually separate an infalling term that Andre taught us how to do, and the one halo inner profile shown in red, which is way steeper than NFW for galaxy clusters. And we also looked at the fraction of red galaxies, and we are now looking at morphology metrics with Andre and Qiwei to see if we can see this transition, this phase-space transition in other ways, ways that are immune to REDMAPPER algorithms too. We've also measured how not round galaxy cluster halos are. So the right panel shows lensing measurements and satellite distribution of halo ellipticity. They're very elliptical at very high significance, and we think we can do interesting tests of gas physics and other things with it. So I'm going to talk to simulators about that. Okay, changing gears. Now to slightly crazier physics. Using the warps of disk galaxies as a test either of gravity, which we had done some years ago, or of SIDM, self-interacting dark matter. So if a disk galaxy falls into a galaxy cluster, the drag of self-interaction slows down its halo, which pulls back on the disk and warps it. The warp you get is this shape. It's different from warps you get from galaxy interactions with a S-shaped. So you get these bowl-shaped warps and thickenings of galaxy disks that are quite significant. We've done some simplified simulations, but we think this could be a competitive probe to, you know, merging clusters and stuff. Thank you.
Hi. So I want to talk about measurements of galaxy lensing of satellite galaxies, which is something that has been developed only over the last few years for a few reasons. And this is my work as a PhD student in Leiden, which I finished a few months ago. And I'm now a postdoc at Princeton. If you can go to the next slide. So the reason why this is something that hasn't been done too far in the past, by which I mean 3 years ago, is because you need a weak lensing data set and a good way to identify the satellite galaxies. And that's a very complicated thing to do. We had a full talk yesterday by Surhud on why what we think is the best way to identify them can be very bad for some applications. So in this case, we have CFHT observations of very massive galaxy clusters, so think above 10 to the 14 solar masses, or very low redshift clusters, so below 0.1 or below 0.15. And by being very low redshift, there's a lot of ancillary data on them, so from SDSS to pointed observations and so on. So basically, it's a sample of clusters with very sharp, deep, and wide field images from the CFHT, with a lot of spectroscopic data to identify the satellite. So I should have, I guess, put the number there, where we have something like 6,000 spectroscopic members in these 50 clusters. And with that, we can measure the lensing signal from the satellites, knowing to a good degree which are really satellites. And we can get results like this. So I'll take you through the figures. The first one is if we take the satellites and we split them as a function of distance from the center with the idea that distance from the center correlates somewhat with time since infall. And the usual prediction that people have in mind is that because of this, you should see a rise. So MBG there is total mass, meaning dark matter plus stars plus gas, etc., over stellar mass. So the total to stellar mass ratio as a function of distance from the center normalized by the cluster size here. So the idea people have in mind is that this should be a declining function of radius because dark matter is more easily stripped than stars. And what we see is not quite that. So you see the data points there. And we also cooked up a crude prediction by combining results from embodied simulations to semi-analytic models. And we actually see that this is also the prediction is that this is flat basically because of projection effects. Then we beam the satellites as a function of stellar mass, and we find the relation there, which you can compare to all the others for central galaxies. It's now the question: what does this mean? Actually, we don't know. We need to know. We don't know what we should be comparing those measurements to. And then finally, this is an upper limit on the total masses of UD of ultra diffuse galaxies that you can find in these clusters, I'll tell you about later if you want.
Hello, my name is Johannes Lange. I'm currently a KITP graduate fellow, and I'm also a PhD student at the university working with Frank van den Bosch. So we recently looked at SSDR7 to determine how well the brightest galaxy in a halo traces a dark matter halo core. Or in other words, we ask how often is the brightest halo galaxy a satellite as opposed to a central. So to measure this, we specifically looked at the velocity and spatial offsets of bright halo galaxies with respect to other nearby galaxies originating from the same dark matter halo. And we employ a full forward modeling approach where we create log S-like galaxy catalogs and compare them to SDSS. And we improve upon a previous study by Ramin Skiba by carefully taking into account several aspects of the analysis that could potentially bias our results. So for example, we take into account that the center galaxy will trace the dark matter halo core much better than the overall center of mass of the entire dark matter halo. And we also use subhalo phase space positions in dark matter simulations to model the phase space position of satellites, so thereby allowing for satellite correlations due to the unlike state of the halo, and also generally a non-spherically symmetric satellite distribution. So by comparing this to SDSS, we can constrain the off-centering as a function of halo mass, and also at a fixed halo mass as a function of the luminosity of the brightest galaxy. So here's one of our main results, the off-centering fraction as a function of halo mass. And in our analysis, we mostly confirmed these previous results for Ramin Skiba, which were surprisingly high. But we also find them to be mostly consistent with other studies based on X-rays and the cross-correlation of luminous red galaxies with photometric galaxies. But there seems to be some tension with red matter results, specifically if you extrapolate these down to lower halo masses. We also show that the off-centering fraction is higher than you would naively expect from theoretical models or empirical models, like the conditional luminosity function, and also some semi-analytic models. And Rachel Mundrum yesterday talked about the discrepancy between satellite kinematics and gravitational lensing. We specifically looked at the effect of this off-centering on satellite kinematics, but find it to be very small. So if you're interested in that, come talk to me. And our paper appeared on archive last night. Thanks.
Hello, I'm Hong Jin. I work with Rachel on intrinsic alignment in red mapper clusters. And this work is also collaborated with CNG and Peter from Statistical Department in CMU, and also people from red mapper group. And so there are two kinds of alignment can be defined within galaxy clusters. The first one is called satellite galaxy alignment. So the potential in galaxy clusters tend to torque satellites to radially point toward cluster center. As shown in the figure here, this configuration have opposite direction with respect to the galaxy lensing signal. So it is important to measure the satellite alignment signal in order to avoid underestimating of the cluster mass. And so under the most conservative shape measurement, we found that the overall population of satellite galaxies within MapMapper is consistent with zero satellite alignment. But if we select our subpopulation with certain properties, the alignment signal can become significant. And the other type of alignment is called central galaxy alignment. So central galaxies tend to align with the shape of the dark matter halo. And we quantify the position, average position angle difference between centrals and the shape of clusters to be 35 in red mapper clusters. And we can view the problem differently by shifting our spotlight on satellite galaxies and asking why satellite galaxies are preferred to distributed along the major axes of BCGs. We study the dependence of the response variable of intrinsic alignment with a total of 17 galaxy-related and cluster-related quantities and apply a statistical method to account for the correlation between parameters and find predictors that are most effective to the intrinsic alignment effect. As shown in the picture here, we find that satellites with redder color, higher in luminosity, and closer to central and with rounder shape are more likely to distribute on the major axis plan of BCG. And then we can link the finding predictors to the theory of of intrinsic alignment to understand its physical origin. So for more information, please come to see my poster. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. So I'd like to flash an observational result that is very much linked to what Guinevere has talked yesterday about how to probe gas in halos. And this is part of an ongoing work about quantifying the amount of multiphase gas around halos. And this is a work that I've been doing with collaborators in Madrid, Paris, and at HESO. So the spider web, So the spider web galaxy is this giant high redshift galaxy that is the most studied galaxies. You see an image in white and blue by George Miley et al., which discovered this diffuse light around these high redshift galaxies, meaning that actually star formation is occurring around the halo. It was ruled out by a very nice paper by Nina Hatch that actually this diffuse light is coming from the radio galaxy itself at the center. And you see the evidence for the radio jet here in orange. Next slide, please. So we've done this very nice experiment with the ATCA radio telescope, where for the first time we were able to actually put the antenna closer, very close together, to do a low surface brightness experiment. And we've discovered this giant halo of gas full of CO gas. You see that the CO gas extends out to 70, 80 kiloparsec. And the VLA, we've done some VLA observations of the central galaxy here in dark blue on the left. And the VLA only detects the gas that is at the very center of the galaxy, but misses all of the molecular gas around in the halo. So this is 100 hours of observation with the ATCA, and we have 200 hours coming up with the C1 and other lines in CO. What is amazing is that if you plot the star formation derived by the UV diffuse light in the halo with this amount, with this giant mass of molecular gas that we've detected, 5 to the 10 to the 11 in H2 converting into H2, it falls under Schmidt-Kennicott relation, showing that this molecular gas actually fuels the star formation in the diffuse halo. So you cannot ignore anymore in models the role of the cold molecular phase, and this is really we're learning a lot of new things about how massive galaxies grow out of halos. And this is part, and I'd be happy to talk to you about models that we've done of multiphase turbulent gas in halos and in filaments with my students Nicolas Corneau, and we have a recent paper on that. Thanks very much.
Good morning, I'm Hong Guo from Shanghai Observatory, and I'd like to introduce our recent work to build up a dark matter halo model for the gas content for the H1 select galaxies. And we found some signature of galaxy assembly bias in the distribution of the H1 select galaxies. And this work is in collaboration with a lot of people here. Next slide, please. And we first used the alpha-alpha sample to have a sample of H1 select galaxies. And we divide the sample into different H1 mass thresholds. So, and we then measure the two-point function for the H1 mass threshold samples. And we found that there is a very strong dependence on H1 mass for the project two-point function. But all these H1 select galaxies have very low clustering amplitude compared to the dark matter distribution. They are anti-biased. The inferred galaxy bias varies from 0.5 for the gas poor samples to 1 for gas rich samples. And for the gas poor samples, the galaxy bias is much lower than expected for the average halo bias for any halo, given halo mass. So we saw that there is a signature for galaxy assembly bias in the H1 mass distribution. So therefore, in our subhalo abundance matching model, we apply the halo assembly bias effect by only selecting halos that they form in, so they have a lower clustering amplitude in order to match the observation. And for our best fitting model, we use the halo formation time here is the scale factor. And we found that the best fitting scale factor is much higher than the average scale factor for the halos of any given mass. And here is our best fitting model. And our best fitting models can fit the data pretty well for all the different electron mass threshold samples. And finally, we apply our best fitting models to predict the electron mass halo mass relation and compare with an empirical model of Popping et al. And also three symmetrical models and also two hydro simulation models from Eagle and Illustrious. And we found that the predicted electron mass halo mass relation can provide very strong constraints to galaxy formation models, especially for the high electron mass samples, because these measurements are more reliable. And it seems that the Illustrious data compared is fit our data best. Okay, that's it. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Elena Massara. I'm a postdoc at UC Berkeley. And today I'm going to present an aspect of the emulator with on-demand simulations that we are building and that we want to reproduce both the halo and galaxy statistics. So a schema of the emulator is shown here. We want to use the FastPM quasi-embedded simulation to predict the nonlinear material density field and then the halo catalog, and then to populate halos with galaxy using HOD models. So in this way, we can study the halo in galaxy statistics. So for now, I'm focusing on modeling the power spectrum, and in particular, all the correction that we need to apply in order to have a good and efficient prediction for the power spectrum. And the first correction that we need to take into account is for the sampling variance, which is the fact that in n-body simulation, we have a sparse sampling of long wavelength modes, and this brings some uncertainties in the determination of the power spectrum on large scales. So in the next slide, here I show the halo power spectrum from 70 different realizations of the same universe, and the black line is the mean of the 70 realizations, so it's the ensemble average power spectrum, and as you can see here, there is a huge scatter around this mean power spectrum. So we do not want to run hundreds of n-body simulation for each cosmology to obtain the true power spectrum, and we need to get rid of the sampling variance in a smart way. We try to do this working with the initial condition in n-body simulations, and so here are our results. So a way to quantify how well we are removing the sampling variance is by computing the RMS on large scales, where basically the sampling variance is dominant. So here I'm showing the power spectrum from one simulation where we do not apply any correction, and you can see the RMS is 0.03. The green and red lines are obtained with one n-body simulation where we basically subtract the sampling variance in two different ways, and you can see that RMS goes down over a factor of two. And here on top, we are using in just two n-body simulations, and the RMS decreases even more. So I don't have time to go into the details of how all these methods work and also all the other correction that we are using for building the simulator, but if you're interested, come and talk to me. Thanks.
I'm Ben Mubking. I'm working on emulating galaxy-galaxy lensing observables into the deeply nonlinear regime with Andres Salcedo, David Weinberg, and others. So I just want to highlight some preliminary results from this work, which is a forecast for Bost-Losey-like galaxy-galaxy lensing and projected clustering, for which we forecast tight cosmological constraints of about 3% on sigma 8 and about 7% on omega matter, after marginalizing over assembly bias and HOD parameters. And if you fix omega matter, we're forecasting constraining sigma 8 to about 1.4% from a Losey-like survey. Next slide, please. So I just want to highlight here, this is the ellipses from the these are the ellipses from the forecast. And this is using scales from about half a megaparsec to 30 megaparsec, H inverse megaparsecs. So you can see, well, you might not be able to see from the back, but you can see on my poster if you look at it later, the first four parameters are the traditional HOD parameters that have been used for many years. We've added two additional parameters, an assembly bias parameter that changes the minimum mass needed to host a central galaxy as a function of large-scale environmental density, as well as a satellite galaxy deviation parameter from NFW. So the satellite galaxy profile can change, is a parameter as well. And then the final two parameters are omega matter and sigma 8. And I just want to highlight that after marginalizing over these things, you still get about a factor of 2 or 2.5 improvement in cosmological parameter constraints compared to large scales. So come ask me more questions. Thank you.
So hello, everybody. I'm Pascal Lahi. I'm based at the International Center for Radio Astronomy Research, which is in Western Australia. And I'm going to be presenting a quick sort of overview of work we've been doing there. So with Chris Power, Claudia Lagos, Aaron Obotham, myself, another postdoc, Charlotte Welker, and a few PhD students, Rodrigo Canas and Reese Poulton. And the idea of this essentially a suite of simulations is basically kind of wrapped up in this International Radio Astronomy Research Center. We want to generate or study the galaxy, the galaxy halo connection, but more so the gas dark matter bucket connection. Essentially, we want to follow the flow of gas that from which we would get galaxies, right? And so this is Simon and Guinevere have pointed out, this is very important. People point out it's very hard. Andrew mentioned that getting gas physics is quite difficult. So let's go on the next slide. So this is a smattering of work that I'm going to just kind of briefly go over. But if you want more information, there's a poster that'll be put up. And I'm going through the corrections to the paper right now. So hopefully in a week, it'll be submitted again and it'll be on archive. And the general idea, of course, with all these catalogs, essentially, are find halos in simulations and then study the evolution of halos, the merger trees. But here it's specifically. So we're doing multi-billion particle simulations. We're trying to get a very, very accurate reconstruction of halo evolution, along with other data products. So we're looking at the cosmic web, because we really want to follow how halos flow into filaments or flow out of filaments, along with orbit revolution. So this is an example of one of tens of thousands of halos, where we can follow the halo evolution actually quite deep in. So there's a blip here. This has actually been corrected. I figured I'd show the dirty laundry, where you can actually get down to about 50 kpc and really follow the halo, the sub-halo satellite evolution, which is really tricky to do. And so with this, of course, you can then look at following orbit, the ramp pressure stripping that orbiting subhalos would have, follow their disconnection from the cosmic web, and produce eventually analogs to Wallaby, which is and other radio surveys, so alfalfa, which is really difficult to do. And as I said, if you want more information, please come see me. But some of the stuff we can do is just obviously phase-based diagrams where we can really reconstruct the number of orbits. So this is just an example of where regions where objects in projected distance and line of sight velocity are well phase mixed. We have a bunch of orbits where we can actually do the same thing for the number of objects that would experience ramp pressure stripping, or likely had satellite-satellite interactions, and not worry about necessarily most of these little blips. That's really hard to deal with in a lot of simulations. And I will think I will end there.
I'm Hao Jie, so I'm a graduate student, I'm a PhD student from the University of Utah. So today I'm going to talk about the galaxy color magnitude dispersion as a function of halo mass. So can you go next one? Galaxies show some patterns in the color magnitude diagram. So we definitely want to know how galaxies and luminosity distribute in the context of dark matter halos. So here we propose a global parameterization of the galaxy color magnitude distribution as a function of halo mass. So with such a conditional color magnitude distribution, we can simultaneously model the project two-point correlation function in this, and also num densities for array of galaxy samples defined by the fine beam colors and the luminosities, like here. So actually, the conditional color magnitude distribution is the project the observed CMD along the halo mass with a separation for for galaxy population with red central, red satellite, and blue central, and blue satellite. So we apply these CCMD modeling to the SDR7 main galaxy sample. And so here I just show a fitting of different color samples for given luminosity. Although we actually simultaneously model much more samples which cover the whole CMD like diagram. The points actually is the measurement, the WP measurements, and the line is the corresponding best prediction from the best fitting CCMB model. So the colors actually is like the represent the sample colors. With this CCMD, so we actually have a lot of interesting result. One of the interesting results I show here is the satellite fraction as a function magnitude and the color. So from this plot, it suggests the most of blue cloud galaxies are centrals and a fraction of red sequence satellites. With the CCMD, we can also construct assembly bias fray marks, and we can investigate assembly bias by comparing the status in marks and the data. This is the take-home message. So, thank you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Heidi Wu. Today, I'd like to talk about galaxy halo connection for dusty star-forming galaxies and cosmic far-infrared background. In far-infrared, most of the galaxies are unresolved. So we study the dusty galaxies collectively in far-infrared background. And the far-infrared background includes the information for star formation rate history and star formation rate as a function of halo mass and redshift. And we'd like to see whether this knowledge is consistent with our understanding of star formation from UV and optical galaxies, and what this background can tell us about the dust in galaxies. So this diagram is basically my model. So I start from dark matter halos in MLD simulations and assign stellar mass using subhalo abundance matching, and assign star formation rate using star forming main sequence and assume a relation between star formation and IR luminosity. So for each halo in our simulation, we have predictions for the far infrared flux, and we can compute the far infrared background power spectrum. Next slide, please. And this is the power spectrum for cosmic far infrared background, the CL as a function of scale. And the black points are data from Planck. And the blue band is from my model. So as you can see that this simple main sequence model works reasonably well in reproducing the clustering of far infrared background. And here we show that the commonly used relation that the IR luminosity proportional to star formation rate actually overproduce the amplitude of the power spectrum. And we need to modify this relation so that it depends on stellar mass. So low mass galaxies are less dusty and are less bright in far infrared. And this model can also reproduce the number counts observed by Herschel. And I'm also comparing this model with Andrew Benson's Galacticus semi-analytic model. So if you have a model that can compute star formation rate and dust, I strongly recommend you compare with the far infrared data. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kareem El-Badri from UC Berkeley. Today, I'm going to talk about the angular momentum content of baryons and galaxy halos and how it scales with mass. This is work I've done with my advisor, Elliot Quadert, with Andrew Wetzel, who's here and giving a talk on Thursday, and with Phil and the rest of the FIRE collaboration. Next slide, please. Okay, so just one result. We ran 24 Zoom-in cosmological simulations spanning halo masses from 10 to the 10 to 10 to the 12 solar masses, and they produced galaxies with stellar masses of about 10 to the 6 to about 10 to the 11. So the lowest mass galaxies observed to about Milky Way masses are a little bit higher. And this is with the FIRE2 model for star formation and stellar feedback. And what I'm plotting here as a function of stellar mass for all of the galaxies in their halos is the ratio of the specific angular momentum, so angular momentum per unit mass of gas to that of dark matter in the top panel, and of stars to that of dark matter in the bottom halo, or in the bottom panel. So first, if you look at higher mass galaxies, about Milky Way masses in the gas, you'll see that this ratio is typically bigger than 1. It's about 2 to 3, which is consistent with previous results. People find that, first, because gas is accreted along filaments, and secondly, because feedback preferentially removes low angular momentum gas at high redshift, Milky Way mass galaxies get higher specific angular momentum in their gas than in dark matter. However, if you go to lower masses, you'll see that, especially at stellar masses below 10 to the 8 or so, this ratio drops off by more than a factor of 10. It's a log scale. And you see qualitatively the same thing in stars. We think this is something that could have been predicted before, and the reason is basically two factors. One is that the average specific angular momentum of gas accreted at late times is much higher than the specific angular momentum of gas accreted at early times. And then the second is that low-mass galaxies are bad at accreting gas at late times. For anything below a halo mass of 10 to the 11 or so, most of the gas is accreted at early times when the average specific angular momentum is lower. And so this is just one result of this. If you want to learn about the morphologies and kinematics of the galaxies, I encourage you to talk to me, come see my poster, and this result should be on archive in about a week. Thanks.
So we've heard quite a bit already about the use of large-scale inter-galaxy statistics to probe the galaxy-halo connection, but not so much about intra-galaxy statistics, the kinematics of individual galaxies within their halos. Fortunately, there'll be a wonderful poster about this tomorrow for you to learn all about it. But for the moment, I'll give you just a teaser on the kinds of things we can hope to infer from galaxy dynamics. So this is called the mass discrepancy acceleration relation. It relates the centripetal acceleration at some galactocentric radius to the ratio of enclosed total to baryonic mass. It's tight, it has a well-defined shape, and it includes information from across galaxies' rotation curves, which means that it contains radius-dependent information on the connection between dark and visible matter. So the plots at the bottom show a small subset of the kinds of things we can learn from this. Okay, so what's going on? A residual of this relation is the difference between a measured value of mass discrepancy d and the average value at that acceleration. These plots are asking whether those residuals correlate with other galaxy properties, in particular size, morphology, and gas mass. So the black lines show the mean offset in delta d in the data between galaxies with high versus low values of these three variables. The histogram shows the results for lots of mock data sets drawn from a model in which halo properties depend only on stellar mass via abundance matching, and not at all on these secondary properties. So any offset indicates that halo properties, and specifically halo mass and concentration, which affect this ratio, depend also on these secondary things. The upshot is that there's weak evidence for an anti-correlation of galaxy size with halo mass and concentration at fixed stellar mass. There's also weak evidence for earlier type galaxies living in more massive or more concentrated halos, and no particular evidence for gas mass having a particular influence on halo properties. So this is interesting, for example, because we do abundance matching using stellar mass. You might imagine that it would be preferable to do abundance matching with total baryonic mass. If that was so, there'd be an appreciable offset here. Okay, so if you want more information, then please come and talk to me or check out this paper. And for many more results from this and other dynamical scaling relations, please see my poster.
Thanks, everyone, for being on time. Any pressing questions to Lightning speakers? If not, let's thank them for a wonderful presentation and stay in strict on time. We have a break for lunch and coming back at 2 o'clock.